All right, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Lloyd here with ATP Video. We are recording and broadcasting. Mr. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Bob. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the February 17th meeting of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. My name is Charles Casperi, and I'm representing Las Virgenes Municipal Water District and am chairing the meeting today. I will call the meeting to order, and I would ask Caitlin to go over the remote meeting procedures and to do a roll call of attendance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give me one moment, please. Okay, good morning, everyone. As a result of the COVID-19 emergency and as authorized by Government Code Section 11133 and Executive Order N-122, this meeting will occur solely via remote presence. And we're very excited to have audiovisual support from AGP Video Inc. So this includes a live stream of the meeting and technical support from AGP staff. This is our first meeting with these services, so we appreciate your patience adjusting. And I will now provide some information on how public participation will be organized for today's meeting, as there are a few notable changes. As I mentioned, for those who only want to watch the meeting, there's a webcast link to watch live, which is on our agenda. If you wish to comment on an agenda item, you must join the Zoom webinar by using the registration link in the meeting agenda. Once you register, you'll receive an email with access information, and you can join from a computer or call in through the phone. When we reach an item under which you'd like to speak, please virtually raise your hand. The raise hand function can be found at the bottom of the screen on the Zoom app. Or if you're calling in, you can dial *9 or *6 to unmute yourself. *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. And please note that public comment will be audio only and will not include shared video or screen shared materials. All members will be able to unmute themselves as needed, but we ask that microphones stay muted unless you are speaking. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so we ask that you please speak clearly. And if your microphone is on but you're not speaking, we may mute you to avoid disruptions. Also, if there are issues with or lags in the meeting broadcast, we may disable participants' video streams to preserve bandwidth. If you experience any technical difficulties, please email it@agpvideo.com. So that concludes the overview of meeting logistics. And Mr. Chair, I'll now move to roll call attendance and introductions. Give me one moment to share my screen. Thank you. Eric Allegria.
Yes, present.
Thank you. Amy Arzat.
Present. And it's Arzate.
Oh, thank you for
correcting. Thank you.
Abby Austin.
Present.
Thank you. EJ Caldwell.
Present. Here on behalf of Director Gloria Gray, who I believe will be joining us shortly.
Sure, thank you. Charlie Casperi.
Present.
Thank you. John Dorsey.
Present.
Thank you. Misty Kearns.
Here.
Thank you. Daniela Furr.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Lippman.
Present, alternate to County Supervisor Sheila Kuhl.
Thank you. Dan Murphy.
Present.
Thank you. Lori Newman.
You're muted, Lori.
Sorry about that. I had raised my hand. I want to just request that On the a list of affiliation, if we could have the member's name, because I can't keep track with the redistricting, so it would be very helpful for me to have, you know, Ben Allen by the 26th. So that's the request. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Lauren Pizer-Mains.
Well, what perfect timing for Lori's comment. Lauren Pizer-Mains, I am an alternate here on behalf of Senator Ben Allen, who represents the 26th district.
Good morning. Dave Roberts.
Good morning, everyone. Dave Roberts, Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, alternate for Charlie Caspery.
Good morning. Randy Rodriguez.
Here. Good to see everyone.
Good morning. Rory Skay.
Present for the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy.
Good morning. Clark Stevens.
Present and good morning, everyone.
Maral Tashtian.
Present, alternative for Director Gary Jones.
Martha Tremblay.
Hi, good morning, present. Martha Tremblay, alternate for Robert Ferrante, Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts.
Thank you. Stephen Uring.
Present.
Good morning. Claire Wagner.
I'm alternate for Deputy Director Jonathan Bishop at the State Water Board.
Good morning. Jeff Wilson.
Present. Good morning. I'm also joined with Gabby Saprita Riso, my alternate. Thank you.
Good morning. Erica Yulensky.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Erica Yulensky, the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program Coordinator with EPA Region 9.
Good morning. And I know that I missed a few members. Forgive me for that. Gabriela Cepeda Rizzo. Good morning. Kelly Clark.
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Megan Cooper.
Hi, I'm here. I'm the alternate for Ann Nothoff on the Conservancy Board.
Good morning. And James Stahl.
Present, yes.
And forgive me for jumping around, Tom Ford.
No worries, Caitlin, thank you. Tom Ford, Director of the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program.
Thank you. And did I miss any other members for roll call?
Please, yes, Shelly Luce is here.
Oh, and forgive me, Shelly.
No problem.
Thank you. And member Arzate, I see your hand is raised. Did you have a...
Yeah, Caitlin, I failed to mention that I'm an alternate for Assembly Member Elmer Succi, who represents the 66th Assembly District.
Okay, thank you for that. So that concludes member roll call. Forgive me, I just muted myself. Member roll call and introductions. So I recommend that we now move to item one, public comment.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Caitlin. We'll now go to public comment for items not on the agenda, but
forgive
otherwise—
me, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I see that we have a member who joined as a public participant. So I will promote Mr. Nguyen to as a panelist. And then invite him to introduce himself. Khun Nguyen, would you like to unmute and introduce yourself, and I will include you in the roll call attendance sheet.
Thank you, Caitlin. Good morning, everyone. Khun Nguyen, attending as an alternate for LA County Public Works Director Mark Mistrella. Thank you.
Good morning, Khun.
Okay, I believe we can proceed with item one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll proceed to comments from members of the public on items not on today's agenda. We have five or six speakers registered. Some people have previously sent their comments via email. And the board did receive those this morning. That's correct, right, Caitlin? So due to the number of speakers, we will allow 3 minutes per speaker. Use your time wisely. Caitlin, would you call the first speaker, please?
Certainly. Thank you. Yes, so we received 4 requests to comment in advance. Excuse me, 5 requests to comment in advance. And we have 4 speakers who would like to comment under item 1. The first speaker we have is Jeanette Vosburgh, followed by Gabrielle Crowe. So Bob, if you could help share the screen with the 3-minute allotment time.
Caitlin and Bob.
Yes.
Yes.
This is EJ real quick. I wanted to note that my director, Gloria Gray, has called in, but she's having complications, I guess, getting into the meeting. So I don't know if there's any way to assist her. Her the last 4 numbers of her phone number are 0117. So I don't know if there's
anything we can do. I'm allowing her to speak. You hit *6 to unmute your microphone.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll let her know.
She should be online right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good morning, Gloria.
Gloria Gray.
Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Okay. Jeanette, you should now have the floor. Jeanette, are you able to unmute yourself? We can't hear you speaking.
I saw you, Jeanette. I saw you just mute your microphone. If you're having connection issues, please give me a call at 805 area code 801-3576.
Okay, so perhaps we will move to the next public commenter and we'll circle back to you, Jeanette, once you've addressed those issues. So next we have Gabrielle Crow. Gabrielle, you should be able to unmute yourself. You now have the floor.
Mi-ha, and good morning, Honorable Governing Board. My name is Gabrielle Crow, and I'm a tribal council member for the Gabrielina Shoshone Tribe of Southern California, as well as an educator for the Biona Wetlands Land Trust. I'm here this morning just to express my gratitude to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as the Coastal Conservancy for opening access to Area A of the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. I would also love to collaborate with your organization so that we can make sure that the kids and adults from all areas of Los Angeles have equal access to the area via public transportation or sponsored transportation. So I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Gabrielle.
Thank you, Gabrielle. Jeanette, are you able to unmute yourself? Okay, so I will move to the next person who requested to speak. That's Patricia McPherson. Patricia, you should be able to unmute yourself at this time.
Thank you. You can hear me?
Yes.
Hi, it's Patricia McPherson, Grassroots Coalition. And I just wanted to alert you to some new issues regarding Biona Wetlands. Number one, all of you, thank you very much, staff, for passing the letter out, the electronic letter that myself and Kathy Knight for BEEP and Dr. Margot Griswold submitted today for all of you. But I also wanted to let you know that we've been in meetings with Fish and Game Commission, which in September reaffirmed the fact that Biona is a Title 14, Section 630, non-marine ecological reserve with its own very specific purposes and goals, which include the fact of protection of its freshwater resources, its salt marsh, which does not do well in full tidal, and also its wildlife corridors. and the Belding Savannah Sparrow and its pickleweed habitat, which it uses for foraging and nesting habitat throughout the year. So while we are working on this with that reaffirmation of the status of Biona, this is really reaffirming the fact that it is a predominantly seasonal freshwater wetland. And we are currently working with the Water Board and other agencies because we've also garnered Biona as being distinguished as a groundwater dependent ecosystem within the Groundwater Sustainability Management Act. And we are working to put together all the information from Playa Vista of all the dewatering that has been ongoing and wasteful discharge into the ocean and into the sanitary sewer system. One of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permits, we just recently had revoked from Playa Vista that water is now being sent into Biona. And we continue to work on more of those NPDES permits to have those waters remain in Biona. One of the things that we wanted to bring to your attention was the Coastal Conservancy, their grants that they provide. We would like to see the contracts for that because they had put forth a preferred alternative that was inconsistent with the Title 14, Section 630, calling it a estuarine marine preserve, which it is not. So as we move forward in time, we'd very much like to stay on top of all of these contracts and ensure the fact that they do adhere to what the Fish and Game Commission assigns status and is in the state registry. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. So Jeanette, it looks like you're unmuted. If you'd like to make your comment, you now have the floor. If you're speaking, Jeanette, we can't hear you. I see your microphone is unmuted. Jeanette, are you able to speak?
Perhaps we should move to the next commenter and then try her one last time at the end.
Okay. So the next commenter we have is Kathy Knight. Kathy, you should be able to unmute yourself and you now have the floor.
You hear me?
Yes.
Yes, my name is Kathy Knight. I'm on the board of the Biona Ecosystem Education Project. We've been volunteering for 30 years to save this system of Biona. And I want to thank Marissa for sending the letters distributing the letters that we wrote to you yesterday. And also, we're very, very, very happy that the Biona Wetlands now has public access. It's been a long time, and we're really, really glad we can walk out there again now. I just want to remind people that it is a groundwater dependent ecosystem, and that there was final environmental impact report on this land done by the Bay Foundation for the Fish and Wildlife Department. They did not do a hydrology study, and we're asking still that a hydrology study be done for any restoration of this by wetland ecological reserve, because the hydrology is very important out there. And bringing in salt water to this area without doing something like bringing in salt water is not a good thing to be doing on this very rare ecosystem that has fresh water in it along the coast. A lot of multiple groups have filed litigation against this final environmental impact report. So we ask your help in supporting a hydrology study be done of Biona for its restoration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. So I'll try Jeanette one more time. Jeanette, are you able to speak?
I am now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say publicly that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Coastal Conservancy, I wanted to thank them profusely for opening Area A of Biona Wetlands to the public. This access will allow the public to see for themselves the wildlife that are there. And I thank both the Fish and Wildlife and Coastal Conservancy for opening it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeanette, for your comments. So that was all we had who requested in advance. Walter, I see your hand is raised. I know you also requested to comment on item 4A. Would you also like to comment under item 1?
Yes, I would. I think I'm only going to comment under item 1 at this point.
Okay.
Should I go ahead and begin?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I just want to clarify, did I hear you correctly that you're no longer allowing public speakers to share their screens?
That's correct.
Okay. So I'll just start by saying that this is the first I've heard of that. I actually spent quite a bit of time working on a presentation, including a number of photos to discuss access, some screenshots to discuss sea level rise, some screenshots to discuss the governance question that we've been trying to get answered. And it's been for probably a year and a half, almost 2 years that we've been sharing our screen. So it is a little disappointing, to say the least, to learn this morning. And we don't even show our faces anymore. And so I would just say that I've never felt welcome at these meetings, and it's always been really an emotional drain to come to the meetings, because it's pretty clear that that there's not really an interest in this kind of feedback. So I'm going to just leave it with a couple points. So sea level rise, I really can't articulate it well by asking you to imagine what the maps look like. But sea level rise is important. And if we've got a project that shows the loss of coastal marsh over time, and we're calling that a critical buffer to sea level rise, I'm really, really nervous for the future of my daughter's planet and the next generation. With regards to access, we're thanking the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Coastal Conservancy, and we mean that. But we hit a ton of resistance from a lot of the members of this board. I suspect that's one of the reasons that we're not able to show video today, right? Is because people who spoke so profusely against access don't want to see the pictures of the kids who have been enjoying this new access. And then in terms of the governance, I understand that, EPA is always going to have your back, and that these very inconsistent statements coming out about who the NEP director reports to, that's kind of part of the way that you've rolled, is to sort of keep that ambiguity and that confusion. Only one member of the governing board ever even really responded to me and expressed interest in finding an answer. But to say that the NEP host entity does their job subject to the direction of the commission on one hand, and then on the very same hand, other hand, say that the foundation operates independently of the commission and not subject to the control of the commission, those are obviously inconsistent statements. And, for you to say, oh no, these are consistent, and just redefine terms as you go, it's upsetting. You're supposed to be a public agency. And so, again, I get the kind of the message at long last that the feedback isn't welcome, and that we have to sort of pursue our goals through other means. Thank you, and have a good rest of your meeting.
Thank you, Walter. And if there are things that you want the board to see, handouts, you're always welcome to submit those in advance. And if our new contractor that provides the Zoom services for state agencies does not, we operate by their rules. We didn't take this action. So thanks for your comments.
Thank you, Charlie. Yes, I'll just add, for public or presenters, staff will just be sharing the slides. So we just need things in advance and we can share, but others will not be sharing their screens themselves. So if you have any questions, just send me an email.
Marissa, this is
Eric Gilman, counsel for the commission. I just wanted to add that, as I understand, and according to my email records, you did provide notice to interested parties that they would not be able to share screen during this meeting in a February 4th email that went out. I can circulate to anyone who's interested in seeing that. And again, just to reiterate, this change is due to new audiovisual services being provided through a third-party contractor. So that's the basis for the change.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, that's all correct.
Thank you both very much. We will now proceed to the next item on the agenda. And I would ask staff if they have any changes proposed to today's agenda.
No proposed changes.
Thank you very much. I will note that we will take a short break before item 4A is presented. And if there are no objections from the governing board, the agenda will proceed as published. I will proceed with my report. I will, the last executive committee meeting was held on January 20th. Commission staff updated the executive committee on their work and on the new audiovisual meeting support services and on the addition of member reports on the CCMP activities as a governing board agenda item. Tom Ford reported on the US EPA priorities to support disadvantaged communities in addressing climate resiliency and NEP funding from the National Infrastructure Bill and NEP activities carried out by the Bay Foundation. Commission staff and legal counsel followed up on governing board member requests. And I would ask the chief administrative director to share these outcomes of these discussions in her report. The executive committee also discussed work plan options for the upcoming NEP funding from the infrastructure bill and pending further guidance from the US EPA. The executive committee approved the proposed governing board agenda items recommended by staff, and closed session was held to discuss ongoing litigation. That is the end of my report as chair. And I would ask if there are any questions to that. Hearing none, I would ask Vice Chair John Dorsey to provide a report from the Technical Advisory Committee. John?
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Good morning, board members. The TAC membership, regarding that, on agenda item number 3B this morning, you'll see a slate of new and renewed TAC members that we've forwarded to for your approval. And regarding the State of the Bay report, the Bay Foundation has released an RFP for a contractor to working with the TAC to develop the next State of the Bay report. And the proposals are now being reviewed with TAC input. And the target for the date for this report will be late 2022, early 2023. And finally, for the Prop 50 proposals that was on your agenda last meeting, they've now been approved by the Water Board, and the contracting process is underway now. And that's all I have to say, Charlie.
John, are there any questions for John on his report up from the TAC?
I see no hands raised.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda will be a report from the Chief Administrative Director, and then to be followed by the NEP Director's report. Please proceed, Marissa.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, hi everyone, and thanks to all of you for being here. First, I will provide an update, as Charlie mentioned, on the follow-up to governing board member request. The first was a question on if we could use voice votes instead of roll call votes for efficiency of time during the governing board meetings. Legal counsel advised that in the remote setting, it's important to continue to use roll call votes for the record. The second question was, there was a request for clarity on if someone can vote on meeting minutes if they did not attend the meeting. And here legal counsel advised that members should abstain from voting on minutes if they did not attend the meeting. And the third item, the EC discussed the elected governing board member eligibility criteria as written in the current MOU. It was requested that they have a look at this, and EC directed staff to explore entities not currently represented on the governing board, how that can be addressed in the MOU criteria, and to bring those suggestions back to the EC in a few months. The EC would then determine if changes are warranted to the MOU, and if that's the case, any proposed changes will, of course, be brought before the governing board. Okay, John mentioned the Prop 50 grant program, and yes, that project list was approved by the State Water Board's Division of Financial Assistance, and staff is now working with the awardees to develop grant agreements. We anticipate those grant agreements will be executed in 6 to 8 months. And an announcement, the new SMBRC website I've mentioned in the past will launch on Tuesday, February the 22nd. So there may be some technical difficulties that day. You would just need to refresh your browser. And staff and Water Board IT have worked hard on this website. We really hope that it is clear and user-friendly and makes it easier to engage with the commission. On that note, the written public comment period to provide input on the SMB NEP Fiscal Year 23 Work Plan opens today, and it's open through March 4th. So please send any comments to the SMBRC email address. That's smbrc@waterboards.ca.gov. And the Santa Monica Bay Stakeholders Workshop will be right in the middle of the written comment period on Thursday, February 24th. The entire workshop is designed to gather public input, and we look forward to a diverse group of attendees. We did receive feedback from the public that a defined public comment period during the workshop is important to them. So to honor this request, we will post a revised agenda, including public comment, by the end of the week. All right, we've heard about the Biona Wetlands Access Update. And just to clarify that, it's the Fiji Way Gate is now open to the public Wednesday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. And there's a short trail there and some benches to walk and enjoy nature, as we've heard. And then quickly, I want to update the governing board that we received the final audit report for the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Authority. A resolution of the governing board terminated the authority's agreement in 2019, and the completion of this audit indicated no issues. So all authority-related business should be closed. Okay, just a couple more things. The governor signed an executive order extending our remote meeting flexibility through March 31st. What that means is that the remote meeting allowance may end before the April governing board meeting. If that is the case, staff will keep you posted on the physical meeting location. And I know this is, kind of a difficult issue for some people, so please feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or concerns about returning to in-person meetings in April. All right, and you've heard today is our first meeting with support from AGP Audiovisual Services. I just want to let you know how important these services are. We're pleased to have their help. They do have that tech support email. We'll make sure you get that by the end of the meeting to make things run more smoothly in the future. But this is an important change. We'll have a live stream with archived meeting recordings available on demand. These services also mean we'll have hybrid services available when we return to in-person meetings, which we need. So just please continue to be patient with any technical difficulties. I believe these services will increase our flexibility and our accessibility moving forward. Can I answer any questions?
Marissa, Bob Lloyd here with AGP Video. I wanted to thank you and introduce myself to your board members. My cell phone number is there for any technical support issues. I do have one comment that I'd like to make is that if you are not speaking during the course of the meeting, I'd like you to mute your microphones. It'll prevent accidentally switching to your image when you're not speaking. So if you are not speaking directly, go ahead and mute your microphones. Of course, leave your video on so we can see that we are all present here. Thank you so much for your time, and we enjoy moving forward here.
Thank you, Bob. Megan, I see your hand.
Thank you. Super minor comment, Marissa. I just wanted to clarify, since I was the one who asked the question, the first question that you reported on, my question was, can we vote by unanimous consent? That's different than can we vote by voice? I just wanted to clarify that. I don't care if the answer is the same thing, but I was just asking if we could use that particular rule, which I use in lots of other meetings. So just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, and counsel can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the answer was the same. I think he just felt strongly about the record in the remote setting, although that could change in the future. Eric, do you have anything to add?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for these comments. This is Eric Gilman. I'll get back to you on that. I didn't look into that specifically. I was considering voice vote, and with the large number of board members we have, and the inability to sort of see everyone and make sure that we're all sort of focused on an item, it seemed important to continue to have the record of our votes. But let me look into this issue, and I will report back to Marissa, and we'll let you know.
Thanks, Eric.
Forgive me, Mr. Chair. Before we move to the rest of this item, I just wanted to note for the record that we had two members join us that have been included in our attendance sheet, member Robert Godfrey of Marina Del Rey Anglers, and then we also have Timothy Pershing joining us. So Marissa, I'll turn it back over to you.
Oh. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you. Let's continue.
I don't see any more questions, Chair, so.
Very good. Tom.
Thank you, Chair. Everybody hear me clearly? Okay, super. want to take the opportunity to catch folks up as to a number of the activities that the Bay Foundation and a number of the partners associated with this work have been conducting. Through much of the early new year here. First, I'd like to start off. We had an opportunity to work with a group called Force Blue, which brings returning special forces veterans who have dive training, either members of the Air Force, Navy, Marines, Army. I think the Coast Guard is also a participant in this. And we were able to bring those folks out, take them scuba diving, show them a kelp forest. We then spent a second day with them actually restoring a football field's worth of area off of Point Furman. So this was actually supported by NFL Green and was part of the Super Bowl proceedings here in Los Angeles this past several weeks. We were further enabled with support from the NFL and Pepsi Cola to bring the students from the Environmental Charter Middle School, who you heard from in October with their composting efforts for their community, down to the Cabrillo Marine Aquarium, where they were supported by the Cabrillo Marine Aquarium staff to take them through a whole series of learning stations so they could explore the plankton and the beach and other aspects of the natural environment. So it was a really exciting day watching these folks. Oh, I'm sorry. Was I speaking over somebody?
No, actually, it was just an accidental on me.
Okay. No worries, Bob. Thank you, sir. They came up with these beautiful shirts. I'll see if I can get a copy of the artwork for you. It says, "Kelp is on the way." They're already putting together a short documentary on this to be able to share these efforts with their members more broadly. This isn't the first time that this group's worked with support from the NFL in concert with the Super Bowl. There was a showing of 100 Yards of Hope at the California Science Center which featured their efforts over the past several years in off of the shore of Miami and off the coast of Tampa Bay, restoring corals to some of the damaged reefs there. So sort of sticking to Palos Verdes and kelp forest restoration, we are getting close to finishing off our efforts underwater at White Point. Very interesting site for anybody that's familiar with White Point. A lot of cultural history there, accessed very easily by the general public. A lot of subsistence fishing that occurs on that site. So we've been especially pleased to try to restore diversity and productivity to that area so that we can directly benefit so many of those visitors and users to that lovely site. That said, the kickoff of getting Point Firmin underway, we expect that we'll be spending a couple to maybe 3 years trying to finish off the restoration of Point Firmin and get that back to a functioning and stable kelp forest system on that reef. Sticking in the ocean for the time being, we've got a few thousand abalone in our mariculture center at the Southern California Marine Institute. We are fattening them up, and boy, are they eating us out of house and home. I can barely keep up with the amount of kelp that the abalone are consuming right now, and cleaning out all the filters and everything is like almost like a daily ritual at this point. And we plan on outplanting those abalone to Palos Verdes in May. We've had to recover some of our abalone feeding enclosures, which are these rigs that we place out in the ocean to provide some shelter for those abalone when they're first introduced to the ocean, because they're not used to the neighborhood and they need a little time to acclimate. So we collected a bunch of those. We've also downloaded, prepped, and redeployed a number of sensors that collect information on temperature and dissolved oxygen on that site. As you may recall, we've been involved in some methodological development and the potential to restore offshore eelgrass to Santa Monica Bay, or to maybe establish offshore eelgrass to Santa Monica Bay. We've done this in three sites, one off of Dockweiler Beach, one off of Redondo, one off of Malaga Cove, which is right down there by Palos Verdes. Tremendous amount of support from Coastal Conservancy, Honda Marine Science Foundation, the State Lands Commission, and the City of Los Angeles, Redondo, and Rancho Palos Verdes. What I can say is we've got eelgrass that is still persisting, that you can swim up to and see growing out of the sand in Malaga Cove right now, based on our last quarterly sampling. We will continue those efforts to see if we see any emerging shoots due to our transplant efforts off of Dockweiler and off of Redondo. And quite interestingly, we may have found a new species of nudibranch in the course of that work. Big peachy colored dorid nudibranch, for any of you that are into nudibranchs. Might be new to science. So that would be pretty cool. Moving more firmly onto the coast, we've been very busy along the beaches of Los Angeles County, receiving terrific support from the City of Malibu, City of Los Angeles, City of Manhattan Beach, LA County Department of Beaches and Harbors, State Parks, again, Coastal Conservancy. What I can say is that we've finished setting up sand fencing and post and rope and seeding at the site that is associated with the Los Angeles Living Shoreline Project and Dockweiler. We're still pushing through some permitting issues along the bluff by Vista Del Mar so that we can extend that work across the full continuum, which was offshore eelgrass to beach to bluff. Doing great work there. The beach installation is pretty much complete. Manhattan Beach, we went in there and the community showed up, and we've already cleared out tons of ice plant across almost the entirety of the site that was expected to be treated this year. So that project is off to the races. off to a great start. And for any of you that spend time down in the South Bay, you know how much foot traffic and bike traffic that area receives. So it's really been a great opportunity to create some awareness for sea level rise and living shoreline approaches to trying to preserve our coastline and our quality of life. That said, this leads us right up into springtime monitoring for many of these living shoreline projects. So we'll be out at Santa Monica, up in Westward Beach and Zuma Beach, and also working very, very much in the LAX Dunes to conduct the monitoring to track the progress of these various resiliency projects. Again, great support from a lot of community members who have come out this year to help us out. So thanks to all those folks who've been doing that work, which also includes Biona. So we've got a relatively small compared to the size of the ecological reserve, community-based restoration effort that's been ongoing neighboring Culver City. We finally had a chance to get a lot of folks out there to assist us with weeding and trying to further the advancement of this reestablishment of native vegetation in that area. Happy to say that it's been a good season for that. Again, thank you to those folks showing up. We'll stop those larger community events in mid-March to make room for the Belding Savannah Sparrow. If that species is neighboring our restoration sites, we don't want to disturb it during its breeding season. moving, well, I guess more into the sort of built community here with our efforts, working with a program called Rethink Disposables, where we have a program that helps folks assess the cost savings, as well as enumerating the amount of single-use plastics that a food preparation facility like a restaurant or a market produces. We looked at that program and the municipal ties with so many efforts that many of the municipalities that support this work. But we said, well, hey, we're missing out on the yacht clubs, right? These people are obviously on the water. They get it. They see the marine debris. So I'm pleased that we've got a case study that is up on the Santa Monica Bay website. It was published on the 2nd of February, which breaks down, I think, quite prettily, almost said prettily, quite nicely, the efforts of the Shoreline Yacht Club in Long Beach, the Santa Monica Windjammers in Marina Del Rey, and the Port Royal Yacht Club in Redondo Beach. Their combined efforts this year are going to yield, you know, 59,000 fewer pieces of single-use plastic moving through our communities and potentially making its way into our coastal waters. And then the last thing I'd like to bring up is a tool that I recently found in response to announcements from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration this week. So the announcement from NOAA was that we are expecting to experience the same amount of sea level rise that we experienced all last century between now and 2050. So for us on the West Coast, that's likely 8 inches or so of sea level rise. If we were in the Western Gulf of Mexico, along the coastline of Texas and Louisiana, maybe as much as 25 inches there due to subsidence and a few other things. There's a lovely tool that NOAA has put together. And if you just Google or use some other search for NOAA SLR viewer, you can zoom into any of the coastline around the lower 48 and the territories of the United States and play around with different simulations of sea level rise, high tide events. I think it can be very illustrative for folks to understand the rates of inundation, the potential forcing of coastal erosion and flooding. That's all I have for you today. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to address them. Thank you. Yes, Marissa.
Tom, I was just going to say, if you send me the link to that tool, I can distribute it with presentations or whatever else to the board after the meeting.
I'll do that. Thank you, Marissa. Oh, and I meant to mention, I'm very excited to see the results of yours and everybody's efforts on your website. Next week. Congrats on that. I'm sure it's been a big undertaking. And I don't know, Charlie, if you want me to manage traffic here or if you wish to manage traffic.
If you can see the hand up, take it.
Okay. Dr. Luce and then Erica Yelensky, please. Oh, you're muted, Shelley.
Thank you. Not my first Zoom meeting, but Shelley Luce with Heal the Bay. I just wanted to comment on a couple of things you mentioned. I was thinking after you talked about all the work on reef restoration and abalone and then dunes and then wetlands, how much work the Bay Foundation is doing that is directly improving coastal resilience. And I wanted to highlight that because I think all of us recognize the importance and all of us work on it in different ways, but I don't know of another single group in San Monica Bay that is doing as much physical work that is actually going to protect people and habitats. So I wanted to say thank you for that. And then you ended your presentation talking about some truly frightening predictions for sea level rise. So I wanted to connect that back to the work you're doing, which is what's going to help protect our region. When I say you, it's all of us and all of your staff and all of your partners. But I just wanted to connect that back and say how grateful I am that this NEP is doing this really important work. Thanks.
Oh, well, thank you, Shelley. And I appreciate that. And I hope it does come across in my reports and my presentations, how many other partners are involved in this work. It's absolutely core in our CCMP. It is the expectations of an NEP program to facilitate those types of partnerships. We could not do this without support from local, state, and federal levels, and from interested members of the public. So I appreciate that very much. It's a pleasure to do the work. Erica, and then Lori Newman after that.
Tom, thanks for your report, and also Shelley, thank you for making that connection. Sorry, I just made the connection sign from, if you have elementary school children, you know this.
Is it one finger?
No, it's this or it's a C, whichever way. sorry, I got off track. Now, I also wanted to point out the Bay Foundation's, hopefully folks have had a chance, this is more of a comment and not a question, but many of the topics that Tom, that you spoke about are really well highlighted on your web, on the Bay Foundation website. I'd just recommend everybody check that out. There's a great video from the Super Bowl, the NFL piece. And it shows the kids from environmental charter schools and that's out there doing great work. And then I was really excited to see that the case study, I didn't realize they were done for Rethink Disposable, the work with the yacht. So that's up as well. And those are really great materials that folks can share with their partners. So, thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Lori, your hand is down. Did you mean to take it down? You're good?
I'll speak on the next item. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments before I turn this back over to Charlie? All righty. Well, thank you all very much. Maybe a little bit later, but Happy New Year to the many of you that I haven't seen yet. All right, Charlie, all yours.
Thank you very much, Tom, for a great report. Next item on the agenda is it'll be a regular standing item on the agenda, and that's reports from members on implementations of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan goals and actions. And so this is the opportunity for members of the commission to share progress that's being made. And Marissa, I'm going to ask you to go a little bit deeper into this so that members know what's available to them going forward.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll just try to provide some clarity on this. So we're excited about this new agenda item. I want to note that this is an optional recurring item. So everyone does not have to provide a report. The goal is to hear a few each time and just stay connected to the work being done to support the CCMP. We look forward to hearing member reports on activities and in events relevant to the 44 CCMP actions and the 7 overarching goals they support. So I know that sounds a little bit confusing, particularly if you're not very familiar with the CCMP. So really quickly, I'm just going to read those 7 broad, short, overarching goals so you see how broad it is and what will be relevant to report on, which I think is a lot of the work you do. So the first goal is protect, enhance, and improve ecosystems of Santa Monica Bay and its watersheds. 2, improve water availability. 3, improve water quality. 4, enhance socioeconomic benefits to the public. 5, enhance public engagement and education. 6, mitigate impacts and increase resiliency to climate change. And 7, improve monitoring and ability to assess effectiveness of management actions. So I'm excited to hear from everybody, and I would like to ask the chair to open it up to member reports or any questions about member reports.
Member reports or any questions about member reports is now open. Marissa, I'm going to let you handle the hands up and call people in to present.
Okay, I'll follow the order in my participants panel. Lori Newman.
Thank you, Marissa. I'm speaking as the president of the Bay Foundation. You all hear from Tom, who is our chief executive officer all the time. And I wanted to take a little time to brag, I guess, about the Bay Foundation and also to make a request of the commission. So I know that you hear all the projects that the Bay Foundation is doing. And I just want to brag, I guess, and thank Tom and the whole staff, because we are at a point where we don't have enough staff to do all the projects. And so we're growing because of that. And seeing what we're doing is really quite phenomenal. And I want you all to come see the projects we're doing. If we can take you there, please let me or Tom know. We'd be happy to. And of course, as a political person, I need to end with a request from the commission. So as a little background, it's my understanding that over the years, state restoration monies, which there's been a lot, we've gotten a lot down here from the Coastal Conservancy over the years, and I'm sure we're going to continue to get more because there's a fair amount of money this year. What I want to say is one thing. We have not gotten our share in Southern California. If you were to look at the stats, which I don't have, and I want to be brief, you will see that more money has gone to Northern California, probably because that's where the legislature is. A lot of power in San Francisco, as you all know. So I want us to come together as each of us representing our own agencies and send some kind of letter to our caucus, you may call it, the coastal members of the state that represent us in the state. And I would also request that we send the similar letter to our federal reps. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lori.
Okay, yes, thank you, Lori. Rory Skay.
Yes, I just wanted to report to the commission that progress on the Wallace-Annenberg Wildlife Crossing at Liberty Canyon over the 101 is definitely underway. Caltrans had a pre-bid conference for contractors on Monday, and there was a wide variety of potential contractors. So we are looking forward to hopefully having a groundbreaking sometime in April. This is truly an ecosystem restoration a project that to span the freeway and provide really a reconnection of the Santa Monica Mountains to the Simi Hills and the Santa Susanas beyond. Very excited about getting underway. National Wildlife Federation has done a tremendous job of fundraising. And I will note that in the governor's budget, he has put another $10 million for the second phase of the project, which would be essentially a land bridge over Agoura Road, which is a frontage road to the freeway. And this is in the Malibu Creek watershed, of course. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's really exciting about the groundbreaking in April. Shelley.
Thank you. I wanted to report on a couple of items related to the CCMP. The first is that the EPA convened a meeting of the Palos Verdes Shelf Technical Information and Exchange Group. And that was in December, and Heal the Bay attended, and a number of other groups who are present today were there as well. This is about the DDT Superfund site on the Palos Verdes Shelf. And we learned that the EPA is assessing three alternatives to remediate that toxic site, including capping and two different dredging options. And they requested feedback on those alternatives. They also would like alternatives on a new monitored natural recovery study, looking to see how quickly the DDT is degrading, I guess, in the environment without any help. That would include sediment, water, and fish tissue sampling. They're going to start collecting these data in May of this year, and the PV Shelf Technical Information and Advisory Group will meet again in June. But if you want to provide feedback on those options, I suggest you contact Judy Chu at EPA, who is in charge of that work. The Fish Contamination Education Collaborative that SMBRC has been part of for 20 years or so will meet again on March 10th. This is a different group. They're meeting in March for the first time since 2019. And this is really important because this is how we reach out to subsistence fishers in multiple languages on piers throughout Santa Monica Bay and the Port of LA in order to make sure people understand the risk of eating fish and feeding those fish to their families if you're going to fish in Santa Monica Bay. And this is really the most effective mediation or mitigation the EPA has for this site right now, at least until the physical mitigation can occur. So I encourage you to participate if you're interested in the Fish Contamination Education Collaborative. And we also attended a meeting in December hosted by EPA on other sites that are non-PV shelf sites. So this is related to Superfund sites that and settlements that were reached related to the Montrose Superfund site on groundwater cleanup and finding remedies for cleaning up these dense liquid phases that are contaminating our groundwater and soil. They're also looking at the pathway of stormwater contamination from the land-based contamination into the ocean. So that's more information than some of you would want, but I know that DDT has been making a lot of headlines lately, and it is a horrendous, toxic, forever chemical, so I really wanted to make sure that people have that information. The last item related to DDT is actually a regional board action that will be taken later this year, because the regional board and EPA established a TMDL, a total maximum daily load for Dominguez Channel and the Port of LA. For DDT, this is legacy DDT that's in the sediment of Dominguez Channel and the Port of LA, and they're going to update that based on new sediment quality objectives. I think this is really exciting, and this is an opportunity to actually push for the implementation of it. It's been on the books for a long time, but has not been implemented. So we will be participating in that work and welcome any other participation as well. And then a couple more things I want to mention are that Heal the Bay participated in an ad hoc committee on the Hyperion sewage treatment plant spill last July. And a report was released last week that's really interesting and really important as this infrastructure that protects all of us and Santa Monica Bay did fail us and needs investment and needs oversight. So that report is really interesting. I encourage you to take a look at it. It's on the Board of Public Works for the City of LA website. And Heal the Bay, in collaboration with the JPL, UCLA, and others, just published a paper on the impact of the Woolsey Fire on ocean water quality, specifically turbidity and fecal indicator bacteria, in the journal Nature. And I can provide a link to that if you're interested. It's related to the modeling work that we do with our NOWCAST modeling. And those NOWCAST models are also online, predicting daily water quality at 14 beaches in the state of California right now for the winter. We'll go back up to predicting for 30 beaches in the summertime, starting in May. Thank you.
Wow, thank you for all those important updates, Shelley. And it sounds like there's probably a couple links in there, maybe to the report and then the link you mentioned at the end. So if you send them to me, I would love to distribute them. Danielle.
Hey, good morning, everybody. So we have a couple of projects in the Angeles District that we're really excited about. One is a project at the near the Malibu Lagoon Adamson House area, and we've had some serious erosion issues at that site. It's a cultural site and also a really important archaeological site. So we are working on developing a project to bring cobble to the area to absorb the wave energy at that site. And at this point, we're thinking we may actually need to apply for an emergency permit, because we're really concerned about the next tidal events coming in, that we're looking for soft solutions versus some more hardscape solutions. And then the other project that we're moving forward with is the Ringe Dam removal. We've actually received funding from the state legislature, and we go to WCB next week on February 24th before the board, and it would be $12.5 million for obtaining 90% planning and design and permitting for the Ringe Dam removal over the course of the next few years. So it's really exciting to see a project that was started in the 1990s move forward. And that's it.
Great, thank you. Interest in Ringe Dam removal was actually brought up at the EC, so that was a perfect update.
Great.
Kelly.
Hi. So I just have some general updates. We are, as Waterkeeper, working on a lot of things right now, but the relevant one for this year is we are in the 50th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, and still very, very far away from achieving the goals that were set to be achieved in 1983. So on that front, Waterkeeper will be rolling out a number of events over the next 6 or 7 months leading up to the October anniversary, where we'll be doing education and outreach. And so I just wanted to let everybody know, and we will publicize them as they come online. But just think of, we've done a lot of good work over the last 50 years, but a long, long way to go to get to those goals. So thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. We'll keep our eye out for announcements. Martha.
Hi, thank you. So today I'll provide a brief update on our work related to Action 21. So I'm gonna tell you, read out what Action 21 is. It's support policies to reduce reliance on imported water. So Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts is in partnership with the Metropolitan Water District to take flow that's currently going to the ocean from our plant in Carson, the Joint Water Pollution Control Plant. The plan is to purify that water and eventually be able to use it for groundwater recharge in our local basins in Los Angeles County and potentially Orange County. So we've been working on this project for a few years now. There's a demonstration facility that's currently operating in Carson. It's a 500,000 gallon flow facility, so it's pretty small facility. We just finished the first phase of testing the various treatment processes that will be involved. The goal here is to collect data so that we can actually get a permit for this project. So the first phase of testing is done. So once the report is out, I'll share it with Marissa to, if you guys are interested. There'll be a new phase of testing starting up this coming month. And that'll continue for, 12 months. We are also currently in the CEQA process. We're starting to conduct the environmental studies to support this process. We expect to release the document, the environmental impact report, sometime next year, early next year. So that's my update this morning. Thanks.
Thank you, Martha. And thanks for the direct tie to the action number. Jim.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to everyone. I'm going to try to be brief in summarizing the key matters of the LA Regional Board related to Santa Monica Bay and related environs. And I'm going to begin in December of 2021, back in history and everything. I would hope that all of you have access to the Regional Board website. I think Marissa can give you a link to that, because there's documents in there that pertain to and summarize all of the actions that the staff and the board are involved in a myriad of water quality issues and monitoring issues. I'll provide updates at future commission meetings as necessary. But as I said, I really recommend you frequent the Regional Board website for announcements and agendas. Renee Purdy, who I think most of you know, who are an excellent executive officer, prepares summary reports of staff activities and board activities for each board meeting. And you can certainly consult that to give you more detail than what I'm going to get into it at each board meeting. Because like these meetings, well, unlike these meetings, ours last all day and sometimes into the evening. As you know, this governing board's last meeting was December 14th, 2022. The regional board met 5 days before on December 9th. Without going through that full agenda, the noteworthy item for the meeting was a time schedule order for the AES Redondo Beach Generating Station for once through cooling implementation, OTC implementation, by 12/31/23. And that was as adopted by the State Water Resources Control Board when they considered the matter, including the issue of grid reliability. The prior date was 12/31/2021. Regional Board staff examined all the monitoring data set interim limits and recommended adoption of the proposed time schedule order in accordance with the State Board action and OTC or once through cooling implementation by 2023. The regional board denied the proposed tentative time schedule order. So I think you can stay tuned as to where that might go or develop. The regional board did not meet in January. However, I think importantly, on January 7th, Governor Newsom announced the appointment of two individuals to the regional board, bringing its membership to its full capacity of seven. The two new members are Norma Camacho of Camarillo and Maria Christensen of LA. Again, you can go to the regional board website or the governor's website to learn more of their backgrounds. I'd say briefly, Norma is an environmental engineer with an extensive water quality management background of over 35 years. Marissa is currently president and CEO of Friends of the LA River. And again, I do neither justice to their qualifications with this short summary. And then lastly, I would tell you on February 10th, the board meeting had a regular, the regional board had a regular meeting and an agenda item for consideration of a renewed NPDES permit for the Boeing company, Santa Susana Field Laboratory. Had a lot of publicity over the years as to activities that occurred there in the testing of jet engines and in NASA's programs, the Department of Energy programs. The existing permit was issued in 2015. There was extensive written and oral comment submitted to the regional board as to the merits of the tentative permit that was to be considered at the February 10th meeting. And it also included certainly a consideration of the work of DTSC, Department of Toxic Substance Control, who has overall responsibility for site cleanup as to soil and groundwater. The regional board's NPDES permit pertains to surface water. The regional board is taking the comments received under advisement, and the comments were extensive, and will announce a meeting date for further consideration of the permit renewal at a future time. In the interim, the current permit remains in effect. And for those of you that maybe aren't really familiar with the site, the southern portion of the Santa Susana site drains to the watershed of the LA River, and there, and thus obviously its connectivity to Santa Monica Bay and importance there. And while the remainder drains to Arroyo Simo, a tributary to the Cayos Creek watershed. So that's my quick summary. Many other issues being considered by the regional board as to all of the 7 points regarding the CCMP that Marissa brought up. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hey, Jim?
Yes, thank you. I'll be sure to send out the website link. Next, we have Bob. Bob Godfrey.
Hi, Marissa. I'm reporting on item number 39 in the CCMP. Our white sea bass program is alive and well. We'll be releasing several thousand white sea bass in April. The problem we are having with that program is the seals are so aggressive on the dock that our pen pals have a difficult time getting down to the pens to feed the fish and take care of them. Next, I'd like to talk about our veterans fishing program. We have scheduled 4 trips for this summer. We'll be taking 100, 120 veterans out on the party boat, Betty O, for a full day's fishing on the water. In this, in that case, they keep the fish and they are shown how to clean and prepare the fish for eating. Next, I'd like to talk about the youth fishing program. We're having some difficulty staffing the program this year. We're experiencing some burnout with our senior management, supervisors, and mentors. We usually spend about $20,000 a year in support of that program. So money is not a problem, but we do have a problem with getting enough people to volunteer their time to manage the program, arrange the groups, and schedule the groups onto the boat. So if anybody has an idea about helping with the staffing issue, I'd be very happy to hear about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Yes, thank you. Timothy Pershing.
Yes.
Hello. I haven't been ignoring or avoiding this group. My spine collapsed last fall, or really in the summer, and I went under some scaffolding being put into my spine. So I was completely out of commission until just recently. I must say, I feel a bit like Rip Van Winkle here. I come to the meeting and it sounds like you put 10 years worth of work into effect over this period of time that I've been gone. It's really impressive what's being done. And I will be contacting a lot of you now to catch up on the specifics of what you're doing and what the assembly member can do to contribute to the efforts in his last term with the assembly. So I'll be reaching out, and feel free to reach out to us. It does every now and then it does work a little bit, right, Danielle? So it's worth doing, and I'm very excited by what everybody is doing out there. It's impressive, especially given the circumstances of the last few years. Really good work.
Thank you very much, Tim. Welcome back. We missed you.
Yes, thank you. Abby?
Hi, everyone. I come with some updates from LA City. So it's great to be here with you all. First of all, I wanted to discuss what's probably top of mind when you hear from LA City, which is the RVs along Jefferson Boulevard. The RV encampment that's adjacent to the wetlands is the result of the city's moratorium on towing vehicles that are being used as dwellings, which was put in place at the beginning of the pandemic with the intent for all Angelenos to be able to shelter in place regardless of housing status. However, it also prevents the city from meaningfully enforcing overnight parking, even in zones where it's restricted, like along Jefferson, so long as those vehicles are being used as dwellings. That said, our office recognizes that this ecologically sensitive area is being threatened daily by trash and vehicle runoff and waste, and we're committed to mitigating and ultimately eliminating these issues as efficiently as we can. So we have two pieces of legislation in the works which would fundamentally change the situation along Jefferson. First, we passed two motions back in October, which instructed the city attorney's office to explore vacating the city's right-of-way, and it would synchronize trespassing rules between the state and city land. We also committed to taking legislative steps to lifting the towing moratorium. As the chair of the Transportation Committee, Councilmember Bonin requested a report back from the Department of Transportation, which would outline the process of the city lifting the moratorium. So they were instructed to include things like how enforcing agencies would identify whether a vehicle is a dwelling or not, how that would affect the city's response, what would happen if it was a dwelling, which teams are sent out, and how the city will prioritize towing given limited capacity when everything is ultimately lifted. So that Department of Transportation report back is expected this month. And from there, we would expect this motion to travel through committees. It could implicate some other committees like public safety or homelessness. And then it would ultimately go up for a vote in council. So in the meantime, our office is committed to mitigating as much waste as possible along Jefferson. We deploy sanitation resources out weekly to do comprehensive cleanups. We've flyered the RVs to let them know about the free pump out services offered at the Hyperion plant. We've deployed a hygiene unit, which is serviced daily for folks who don't have facilities within their vehicles. We've led a hazmat walkthrough with LA Sanitation to identify further services, including storm drain cleanings and leaky vehicle emergency responses. I also liaise between LAPD and the land managers to support anti-trespassing operations on state lands. And we've passed a motion which granted the Friends of Biona $64,000 to do rehabilitation work along the areas that have been eroded and impacted on that walking path. So overall, we're committed to taking accountability for our portion of the wetlands and look forward to working with our partners at the county and state level to adequately protect this area. Moving on, we also have some Measure W projects going in my areas of the district, one along Imperial Highway and one on La Cienega Boulevard. Both of them are pre-design phase, but we're really excited to get those Measure W funds and help with that. And we are also working to ensure public access to trails and the coastal zone. And to ensure that the coastal zone is restored, maintained, and enhanced in various ways. So first, getting the city to work with the Coastal Commission to ensure that public access to important off-street parking and restroom facilities is restored at the Temescal Ridge Trailhead in the Palisade Highlands. We're also using Prop K money to improve trails in the Rim of the Valley trail system. And finally, last week, the council member had a motion directing the city government to study methods to improve equity and access in the coastal zone. That was approved by the Planning and Land Use Management Committee. The rules, if adopted, would correct decades of exclusionary land use policy in the coastal zone and encourage a coastline that is accessible to everyone, including our historic populations that have been evicted, priced out, and displaced. And the proposal now heads to full city council for approval. So those are my updates, and it's great to be here.
Thank you so much. Clark?
Hi. We appreciate the opportunity here to report out from the Resource Conservation District of the Santa Monica Mountains. on our efforts to protect, enhance, and improve the ecosystems of Santa Monica Bay and its watersheds. On water availability, we've continued our participation in IRWIMP and other coalition groups, but we've primarily been focused on water availability for our local aquatic endangered species. That includes ongoing restoration for fish passage and sea level rise resilience at Topanga Lagoon, Lower Riparian, and beach areas in our restoration project there. That's in cooperation with state parks and others, Department of Beaches and Harbors. And funding has come thus far from Coastal Conservancy and DPR. Plus, for the next phase, the CEQA phase, our first ever direct state budget allocation, thanks to Assemblymember Bloom, that will take us through to focus on a rescue and also from that same allocation, a different item that will allow us to focus on a rescue, recovery, and genetic banking plan for our remaining coastal southern steelhead. On water quality, our wanted to point out that our WCB and LA County funded wildlife underpass project, phase one of the Liberty Canyon connectivity project, Bay Foundation participated on that. It's not only a recreation of a formerly severed creek, but is also a bioswale that treats runoff from the interchange off ramp and a good portion of the 101 freeway there. So we're looking and developing other such multi-benefit projects that combine connectivity and water quality enhancement in both Malibu Creek and Upper LA Creek watersheds. Regarding socioeconomic benefits to the public and public engagement and education, I just mentioned that we fairly recently hired a new education coordinator and have expanded our range of offerings to the communities we serve, and through outreach efforts, we've increased the diversity of those communities we've served. We serve. Our wildfire resilience work has also expanded to include socially vulnerable communities in the region. Regarding mitigating impacts and increasing resilience into climate change, besides those coastal restoration efforts at Malibu, Topanga, and Trancas Creeks, we completed a San Ynez Band Chumash funded technical report on the state of the Santa Monica Mountains to Sierra Madre's habitat linkage. That's our primary umbilical for climate flow and continued biological diversity in the Santa Monicas. We completed a native tree loss and climate appropriate restoration analysis for the greater Santa Monica Mountains region, collaborating with NASA JPL on that work. And finally, on improving monitoring and ability to assess effectiveness of management actions, as I mentioned above, we're looking forward to having a budget allocation to allow us to really look at the southern steelhead and assess the monitoring that we've done over the last several decades and really look forward to what we're going to do and what the best approach is to maintain this population, which we maintain is the population that's best adapted to the variability we see in the future regarding climate, given that it's never had it good when it comes to water reliability in its region. So thank you.
Thank you, Clark. That was very comprehensive. I want to say before we hear from Megan, our last report of the day, that obviously in the future, in the interest of time and not staying over, we might have to limit this in some regard. But today, I thought it was important to let everyone speak. We've been missing connection from in-person meetings, and I think this was all really valuable. So, Megan.
I agree. Thank you, Marissa. A few quick things. This is on CCMP action number 25, which is about improving public access. So we have two funding sources available right now at the State Coastal Conservancy. One is our Explore the Coast program, which is a program that seeks to fund local partners to increase access for folks who have barriers to access along the coast. So we wanna fund enjoyable programs for folks to come Enjoy the Coast. That RFP closes March 11th. We also have a new grant program called our Coastal Stories Program. The original RFP date has passed, but we're accepting applications on a rolling basis. So this is really about lifting up stories along the coast from communities that really haven't been shared and highlighted. And we really want to start hearing more from those communities along the coast. And we are actually going to fund that program again next year. So that's the Coastal Stories Program. And then I just wanted to mention in general, we are anticipating a $350 million allocation in next year's budget to the Coastal Conservancy for coastal resilience projects. And I just wanted to point out that this existing list of projects on the CCMP list is really, really helpful for us to be able to understand local priorities and local projects that are ready to go so that we, when we create our strategic plan for how we will spend those funds, we could already have a sense for the local needs in the Santa Monica Bay. So thanks for that list. That's all.
Thanks to everyone. Chair.
I want to thank everyone for providing those reports. Some wonderful work being done. And it's good that we're reminded of some that we may not have otherwise heard about. The next on the item on the agenda will be governing board business. That is consideration of approval of the December 14th meeting minutes of the governing board. Does anyone have any changes proposed to the minutes, the draft minutes as published?
I don't see any hands raised.
Very good, then I would ask for a motion to approve the minutes as published. And a second, please.
This is Claire, I move.
This is Jim Stahl, a second.
Thank you, Claire and Jim. Caitlin, would you call the roll vote on the approval of the December 14th minutes, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Allegria?
I will abstain. I was absent in that meeting.
Thank you. Abby Austin? Abby Austin?
Sorry, I had mic issues. Approve.
Thank you. Charlie Casperi?
Yes.
Thank you. Kelly Clark?
I'll abstain. I wasn't there.
Thank you. Megan Cooper?
Yes.
Thank you. Robert Godfrey?
Yes.
Thank you. Member Gloria Gray? Should be able to unmute yourself. Oh, I don't see her in the meeting any longer. Misty Kearns?
I need to abstain. I was absent as well.
Thank you. Danielle LaFer?
I also abstain. I was absent.
Thank you. Timothy Lippman?
Yes.
Thank you. Shelley Luce?
Abstain.
I'm sorry, was that an abstain?
Yes.
Thank you. Dan Murphy?
Abstain.
Thank you. Hoon Nguyen? Kun Win.
Sorry, yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay, Randy Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you. Rory Skay.
Yes.
Thank you. Jim Stahl.
Yes.
Was that a yes?
Yeah.
Thank you. Clark Stevens.
Yes.
Thank you. Moral Toshian?
Yes.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Thank you. Steve Uring?
Abstain.
Thank you. Claire Wagner?
Yes.
Thank you. Jeff Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you. And I will return to EJ Caldwell, alternate for member Gloria Gray. Would you like to vote on this item?
Yes, thank you very much, Caitlin. I vote yes on behalf of Director Gloria Gray.
Thank you very much. The motion passes and the meeting minutes are approved.
Hi, I just want to make sure it's clear that I'm in the meeting. I came in a little late at around 10:30.
But apologies.
No worries.
Okay. Well, give me one moment and I can record your vote on this item. Thank you for your patience. Okay.
Yeah, apologies for being tardy.
That's quite all right. Okay, Member McMorrin.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, the motion passes. The minutes are approved.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is a consideration of appointment and reappointment of members to the Technical Advisory Committee.
You're muted. Marissa?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Okay, I'm going to give a very brief staff report on this. So the Technical Advisory Committee is comprised of volunteer scientific experts who are knowledgeable in technical areas important to the Commission's goals and objectives in the Santa Monica Bay and its watersheds. The TAC develops and finalizes the State of the Bay report. They work collaboratively to provide information and recommendations to give to the governing board and the EC. They also may fulfill other functions that are in the commission's MOU. So TAC membership is for a 2-year term with no term limits. The governing board approved reappointment of the current TAC at the February 20th, 2020 meeting. So consideration of approval is needed today before terms expire. There was a TAC meeting on January 13th to confirm willingness of current members to continue to serve, to finalize recommendations for new TAC members, and to have the TAC approve their recommendations for chair and vice chair. So those tasks were completed, and today staff have prepared the list for governing board consideration. Quickly, I want to acknowledge that one TAC member, Mas Dejiri of LA San, will not be continuing his role on the TAC. I want to thank Moss for his many years of valuable service. It's been clear how much the TAC members respect his input and he will be missed. Next, I want to clarify that there are 4 new TAC members being recommended today. So there will be a total of 10 TAC members moving forward. In choosing new member recommendations, the TAC identified specialties needed to balance current members' knowledge, and they discussed the appropriate size of TAC for optimal function. The commission is appreciative for the volunteer service of all of these experts in their fields. I am going to skip going through the list of 10 candidates and affiliation in the interest of time, but hopefully you've had a chance to review those in the staff report. And if there are any questions, of course, please let me know. Are there any questions at this time? Megan.
Sorry, I just have one question. This list looks great. I'm just wondering if John or you could talk about, was there discussion about adding someone with traditional ecological knowledge to the TAC, a tribal member or somebody who has that expertise?
Yes, that actually is a great point. No, we did not actually consider that. But I think it's something that we could certainly bring up at our next TAC meeting. And I'm not sure what the process is to make any amendments to our membership list, but that's something we could certainly discuss with the other members of the TAC and Marissa.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I don't see any other hands, so I would ask the chair to open this item for approval.
This item, the staff recommendation is to reappoint 6 members and appoint 4 new members. I'd like a motion and a second to that effect, please.
This is Roy Skinny. Oh, go ahead. I'll second then.
Mr. Chairman, the only, not to amend the motion, but in terms of what John Dorsey said, I would request again that at the, or I would request that at the next meeting of the TAC, they bring up this issue of expanding the membership and get back to us in that regard.
Very good, Jim. That's the governing board can certainly pick this up at a again prior to 2 years from now. So that, John, you've heard the request. We have a motion and a second on the item. I would ask Caitlin to call the roll vote, please.
Thank you, Chair. Member Alegria?
Yes.
Thank you. Abby Austin?
Yes.
Thank you. EJ Caldwell?
Yes.
Thank you. Charlie Casperi?
Yes.
Thank you. Kelly Clark?
Yes.
Thank you. Megan Cooper?
Yes.
Thank you. Bob Godfrey?
Yes.
Thank you. Misty Kearns?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Danielle Lafer?
Yes.
Thank you. Timothy Lippman?
Yes.
Thank you. Shelley Luce?
Yes.
Thank you. Yasmin Imani McMorrin?
Yes.
Thank you. Dan Murphy?
Yes.
Thank you. Kuhn Nguyen?
Yes.
Thank you. Randy Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you. Rory Skay?
Yes.
Oops. Thank you. Jim Stull?
Yes.
Clark Stevens?
Yes.
Thank you. Maral Tashtian?
Yes.
Thank you. Martha Tremblay?
Yes.
Stephen Ehring?
Yes.
Claire Wagner?
Yes.
And Jeff Wilson?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The motion passes and the TAC membership is approved.
Very good. I appreciate unanimous vote to approve these members of the TAC. I would ask the Chief Administrative Director to prepare a letter of thanks to the outgoing members who have are leaving the TAC and transmit that to them with our enthusiastic thanks for their service. This is a labor of love for these individuals, and we couldn't do what we do without their expert advice and assistance. So, Marissa, can you take care of that, please?
Yes, agreed. We will comply with that request.
Thank you very much. We will now take a short minute break, a 5 minute break, and we'll come back to a presentation on the 2023 NEP work plan.
All right, we are recording and broadcasting.
Thank you very much. We will call the meeting back to order, and I would ask Caitlin to introduce the presentation on the 2023 work plan.
Thank you very much, Chair and members of the Governing Board. In the interest of time, I'll keep my introduction short and just summarize some of the key information in the staff report for this item before turning it over to Tom Ford. So over the past few months, Commission staff and the Bay Foundation staff have been working together to develop the draft work plan for the next fiscal year 2023. So that covers work between October of this year to September 2023. The preliminary draft of planned activities of the Santa Monica Bay National Estuary Program is attached to the staff report and is posted on the Commission's website and was distributed to members on February 4th. And we're very excited to receive input from members and stakeholders on this preliminary draft. It's very key in the process. So all are encouraged to provide written comments during the written public comment period that Marissa mentioned opens today and closes March 4th. And stakeholders, members of the public are also encouraged to participate and provide input at the virtual Santa Monica Bay Stakeholders Public Workshop next Thursday, February 24th at 1 p.m. The agenda and registration information is available on the Commission's website. And as Marissa mentioned, please keep an eye out for a revised agenda for the workshop. And members, if you or your staff plan to attend, please let us know. That would be very helpful. We anticipate bringing a final draft of the work plan to the governing board for consideration of approval in April. That's after considering all input, developing a response to comments document, and completing the remaining sections of the work plan. So now I will turn it over to Tom. Give me 1 second to share your screen. Sorry, my PowerPoint just crashed. Okay, starting it up again. Thank you for your patience, Tom.
Right. No worries. thank you, Caitlin. I think you covered on a few of the key elements that will be reinforced in this slideshow, and I'll do my best to also be pretty quick with this endeavor not to repeat anything that folks have already heard. So there it is, fiscal year 2023 work plan. Caitlin, next slide, please. Marissa already reminded us of the 7 action plan goals. So these are our overarching targets in a way. Here they are listed out for you. Many efforts to protect, enhance, and improve, as well as mitigate some of the impacts and increase resiliency to climate change. So these are, you know, regardless of the action or any number of actions may contribute to achieve these goals, or a individual action may help address more than one of these goals themselves. So if you've spent some time with the CCMP action plan, we do hope that is conveyed in its structure. Next slide, please. And although our action plan, those 7 goals were determined through our processes at the time, in 2018, they're still relevant to what are the strategic plan goals in this case of the U.S. and of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, who has a draft fiscal year 2022-2026 strategic plan, one of which is tackling the climate crisis, and number 5 is ensuring clean and safe water for all communities. So we're very pleased to be doing our part on our local scale with our partnership to advance not just our 7 goals, but these goals of the EPA. Next slide, please. So Caitlin hit on a bunch of this already. Here it is for you visual learners. October 22, 2022 to September 30th, 2023 is the time frame for which the actions, the next steps, which I'll illustrate slightly later in this, that information that we're hoping to get from you and from the stakeholders and from members of the public to help advise and inform a plan moving forward. To help you further contextualize what we're talking about, we don't have a budget yet that has to go through appropriations processes with the federal government. But we anticipate there being around $700,000 available to push forward the elements of an annual work plan for fiscal year 2023. There's the dates that we're gathering input from February 17th through March 4th. And Caitlin just reminded us of the governing board meeting date, where we hope to have a final draft for your consideration and approval. And then by June 1, the folks that that work for me will have a application put together for submittal to USA Region 9. Please. This was mentioned briefly earlier in our agenda. The bipartisan infrastructure law has allocated in it $132 million for the National Estuary Program. So that is 28 programs. This bill, or I should say this law, also is looking at this expenditure over the course of 5 to 7 years. So when you break all this down, we expect that this may yield as much as $900,000 per year, in addition to what we foresee as $700,000 for FY23, and monies that may be available to us very soon here in what is still fiscal year 2022. Perhaps the most important bullet on this slide is that we are expecting guidance soon, meaning we have yet to receive instruction as to the scope of what could be that these monies could be spent upon. We expect that the priorities will be climate resilience and environmental justice. It is also expected to support elements of our CCMP. So those actions that we were already talking about, the various priorities for our annual work plans, this bipartisan infrastructure law funds, we anticipate are going to help push, elevate, put some more financials, some more capital to advance that work. So there, we need your input for this, just like we need your input for the annual work plan. So moving forward through February 7th through March, the 17th of February through March 4th, you know, we're looking to take input that might also help us understand how we could allocate efforts in expending these funds. We've already received input from you and others for the FY 2022 annual work plan. We're now in process here today, looking at the FY 2023 annual work plan. And I think the last slide should be coming up. So getting a little bit deeper into the structure of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, chose, you know, action number 6, restore healthy beaches. And really what the ellipse at the bottom of this is circling is, you know, what we're looking to help refine for a given year. And in that case, it is the collaborating partners. Do we have everybody that's doing work in our region, you know, ascribed to moving one of these actions forward? Do we have a reasonable list of next steps, those next steps that we could start and finish perhaps in a 12-month period of time? And if so, what would be the corresponding performance measures that we would assign to those so that we can check back and see whether or not we got our job done? So that's just a little help for any of you who might want to focus in on how you could best provide information to us at the Bay Foundation working on this item. So with that, I think I will stop chatting. I can open it up to questions if there are any, and I'll do my best to try to help answer them.
I don't see
you guys are all talked out from the earlier part of the meeting. That's great. And I'll just follow what I was doing last time. Shelley, I do see your hand up. Thank you, Charlie.
I have a question about the funds that will be allocated to the NEP. I think that's great. Congratulations. It's great for all the NEPs. And I'm wondering if there's any conversation about having the kind of program that we used to call the public implementation and education grants, or the PI grants, where EPA money could be re-granted by the NEP to local groups to carry out projects that also fulfill the CCMP.
Yeah, no, what I can say, Shell, is that there's certainly opportunities for programs to be co-leads in this action plan or other folks aside from the Bay Foundation that do serve that role. I think that might be one tangible way to get back that. I remember the PIE program a bit, although it's been a while ago. I'm certainly happy to look at that and see what those potentials are. Thank you.
Any other questions for Tom or for staff on this agenda item?
I see no other hands raised.
Okay. You know, again, this is an opportunity for collaborative partnerships to be further developed or strengthened or initiated going forward, because the funding is never going to be enough to accomplish what the wish list is. So getting some of these projects up and running and finished is going to require collaborative partners. And this is nothing new, but again, this is an opportunity until March 4th for members of the governing board and the public to submit suggestions. We do have the stakeholders workshop coming up next week on the 24th, and that will be a virtual meeting. And so I urge everyone to attend that and do your homework prior to that so you can make specific submissions that the commission will review at its April 21st meeting. Any other questions on this item or comments by staff?
There's no hands raised, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Caitlin, and thank you all. Thank you, Tom. The next item on the agenda will be a presentation on the Hyperion 2035 program, a vision for 100% water recycling. And Marissa will introduce this item.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking forward to this presentation. We have Christina Jones with us today to provide an update on the Hyperion 2035 program. Christina is an environmental engineer with LA San. Over the last 10 years, she has worked with several programs, including biosolids management, overseeing regulatory issues, program outreach, and project management for a renewable energy demonstration project. Currently, she is one of the project managers for Hyperion 2035, taking lead on LA San's recycled water outreach and the Hyperion Advanced Water Purification Facility. Thank you very much for being here, Christina. I'll turn it over to you for your presentation, and I believe Caitlin will share the slides.
Thank you, Marissa, and good morning, almost afternoon, everybody. Thank you for this opportunity to join you today. Like Marissa said, I am just one of the project managers, so I'm going to cover some information and overview today, and hopefully we have some time for questions, and anything I can't answer, I will be happy to pass it along to my coworkers, because there's a lot of people working on this project, as you can imagine. Next slide, please, Caitlin. So as you are all probably familiar, there was the LA Green New Deal in 2019, which identified multiple goals for the city, two of which are directly related to the water resources. Through this plan, the city committed to recycling 100% of its wastewater and to source 70% of all water locally, both by 2035. Next slide. This map illustrates the source of water here in LA. Based on a five-year average, the State Water Project, the LA Aqueduct, and the Colorado River Aqueduct make up the city's imported water supply, which is about 89% of our water resources. The 11% remaining is from local resources like recycled water and groundwater. As you can see, these water resources do come from quite a distance, and this is in part another reason why Hyperion 2035 and Operation Next programs do offer a valuable change to the city. Imported water is susceptible to challenges like seismic vulnerability, climate change, drought, and like with everything these days, rising cost. Next slide, please. The goal set forth by the Green New Deal would take the traditionally separate services offered by LA-SAN and LADWP and connect them. This program would enhance local recycled water supply, and this would allow our water supply portfolio to become less reliant on imported water sources and would be much more diverse portfolio utilizing groundwater and recycled water. To start off, I want to briefly describe Operation Next. Next slide, please. Hyperion is the endpoint of all the sewers in the Hyperion sewer shed, and it's represented in the green box here on the map. So that being the case, we might want to talk about, you know, how is the water going to get back into our distribution system? Just to give you a general idea, the water from Hyperion will travel in a few different directions. It's going to travel up north to the LA Aqueduct Filtration Plant, which is the starting point for LADWP system. And this is going to enable us to provide water to about 70% of the city's demand. In addition, this area has some geological benefits. The San Fernando Basin does offer a great amount of groundwater storage. The second area that this water will travel to is the Central and West Basins, where the water from Hyperion 2035 will go to replenish groundwater basins and be pumped as needed. It will go into the distribution systems, which are indicated as through the red triangles on this map. Next slide, please. Now to get into Hyperion 2035, which is my main area of work, our goal is to transform Hyperion from a full secondary treatment plant to a 100% water recycling facility by 2035 for potable reuse applications. This will be done by converting the existing secondary treatment process to advanced treatment. We plan to produce up to 217 million gallons per day of recycled water. Next slide, please. We have broken up the implementation of Hyperion 2035 into three main phases: conceptual, design, and construction. We are currently in the conceptual phase, so our focus right now is on evaluating and investigating a few different topics. For example, possible advanced treatment processes, management of wet weather flows, MPDS permit requirements, and program delivery. LA-SAN and LADWP have also started the process for the programmatic EIR to cover these programs. As part of the conceptual phase, we also have two projects currently in construction at Hyperion. This is what's depicted in the graphic in the lower right. We have two projects. It's the MBR pilot facility, which is finished up with construction. So we're looking forward to getting that started soon. And it's going to evaluate various MBR technologies. And then the Hyperion AWPF, which is my project, is going to act as a proof of concept for Hyperion 2035 and will allow us the ability to provide valuable hands-on experience to our operators as they get trained and brought to speed to address the plant as it gets transformed into 2035. Next slide, please. As you might imagine, there are many different items to discuss and address. This is a brief list of some of the items we are currently working on. At this point, for the most part, there is a wealth of information on these items, but we still have a lot left to evaluate, look at, and to work on. For those of you that participate in our advisory groups, because I do recognize some of the names in this participant list, I want to say thank you for participating and for the feedback you do provide us. It's an important part of the process for us. And I won't be able to make it through this whole list today, but I would like to start off with the protection of the environment and health and human safety items on this list. Next, please. Hyperion has an existing MPDS permit, which focuses on TSS, BOD, and ammonia. Currently, we discharge about 225 million gallons per day to the Santa Monica Bay. And the graph here, it depicts our typical average monthly discharge quality for the effluent. And the blue bars are our performance, and the green triangles are the MPDS permit limits we currently have. Next slide, please. You're probably all familiar with this graphic already. but this is the 5 Mile Outfall, which Hyperion uses to discharge that 225 million gallons per day. In the future, this piece of important infrastructure is something we have to consider as well. The outfall is important for emergencies. However, something that has to be used on a regular basis in order to make sure it will not get clogged due to long periods of non-use. So based on information we currently have, the flow required to maintain the health of this outfall will be 49 million gallons per day. And since we will be changing the treatment process at Hyperion, this means that the effluent water quality will also change. However, there is some good news here on our projections for the effluent water quality. Next slide, please. We have found that there will be a considerable reduction in the solids, organics, and nutrient loading to Santa Monica Bay from our outfall. The green bar indicates our current performance again. And as you know, as I just stated before, we are below permit limits, which are not shown on this. And the gray bars, which are almost not visible because they're so much lower, indicate our future performance. So we are happy to say that based off our current projections, we're seeing a great reduction in the mass loading to Santa Monica Bay. Next slide, please. There are several treatment options that we are looking at. Just for the sake of simplicity here, I'm going to number them 1, 2, and 3. All three treatment options use primary clarifiers, MBR, RO, and UVAOP. However, there is a difference in the order that they are shown. And for the direct potable reuse options, there is the addition of ozone and VAC treatment processes. I would like to draw your attention, though, to the orange arrows, which indicate the RO concentrate. And I'm bringing this up because this directly relates to CECs. Because although the RO is great at removing CECs from the product water, it does mean that those CECs will get placed instead in the RO concentrate. So it's very important we look at how we are going to treat and handle and manage the RO concentrate in the long run. The good news is that there is a treatment solution to help with this. That would be option 2 here on the screen. And that would mean we would include ozone BAC before the RO process. That would help treat a large majority of the CECs and prevent it from being in the RO concentrate. And it would also have the added benefit of improving the product water quality. Next slide, please. Out of the 131 regulated constituents, only 3 have come back as a potential concern for the RO concentrate. Any constituents not addressed prior to the RO will be concentrated in the RO concentrate. That's what ROC stands for, by the way. Apologize for my shorthand. Ongoing MBR pilot testing and future ozone BAC testing will demonstrate how these processes will further reduce concentration of constituents in the RO concentrate. And with respect to the RO concentrate quality, option 2 does include ozone BAC again. So we're looking at that quite a lot as a good solution to CECs. That wraps up the technical information I have to share today, which probably sounds like a lot of information already. So I'm apologies for the speed at which I covered it. And if I could get to the next slide, the last little bit of information I want to share with you is on the all-important CEQA process that we are in the middle of. We're taking on right now the programmatic EIR that will cover both Operation Next and Hyperion 2035. We've already completed the NOP process, and we are currently preparing the draft EIR. So if you would like more information on that, the website is, and sorry for this not being on the slide, the website is www.ladwp.com/operation-next/CEQA. So, and with that, you can go to my last slide. You can see my email and the program website, and I would be happy to take any questions over email or here today. So thank you.
Christina, I want to thank you for a great presentation. It's an extremely ambitious project, and we hope that the timeline continues to work. Tom, go ahead.
Tom, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Charlie, and thank you, Christina. I was just hoping you might be able to spend just a couple moments on, because I know that the, during wet weather, the volume of water that goes to Hyperion can be, you know, five times, if not more, than what you normally receive. So what's the plan there?
That's a very big topic. You're right, Tom, and I did not cover it at all. In part, like many of the things I did talk about, we haven't made decisions yet. Wet weather is a great example. We're still looking at solutions that are going to balance, you know, financial considerations, because, you know, we do have to be thoughtful of ratepayers. I'm one of them, actually. And we also need to consider the environment and, you know, Hyperion, for those of you that maybe haven't visited us before, there isn't any free space on there. We have a parking lot and that's about the most free space we got. So there are a lot of possible scenarios on the table for that. And we haven't decided anything yet. So I'm afraid I don't have a lot to share with you. But I appreciate the question and I'll try to cover that in a future advisory group meeting.
No worries, Chrissy. I'm appreciative of the magnitude of what you folks are taking on there. And I was just curious if there was any early resolution on some of those issues, but totally understandable that there may not be at this time. Thank you.
So the question, Tom. Jim, you've got a question.
Yeah, just briefly. I would hope that we can make the PowerPoint presentation available to all of the members. Or send out the link or send us a copy of it. I think that would be wise.
Marissa can take care of that.
Yes, we will do that.
Thank you, Jim. Shelley.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. I have a couple of questions, and I'm also on the advisory group, so I appreciate you taking the time to come share with a much broader group, Christina. My questions are, one, I guess it's a comment. It seems really important to include that ozone and bacteria treatment in option one, because while it doesn't impact the product water that we will drink, it has a huge impact, or it may have a huge impact, and I think we should look at the impact on the ecosystem, because those CECs or contaminants of emerging concern include endocrine disruptors, forever chemicals, things that we always regret later, DDT and PFAS being cases in point. So please keep that on the table and let's evaluate the added cost against the cost to our environment as we go forward with this planning. And my second one is a question. I understand that this is happening more and more around the country, around the globe. It's very exciting advance in water sustainability. And in other places, I believe sanitation districts are separating industrial influence to the plant from domestic and residential and commercial in order to reduce the cost of treatment of the end product. So you can take out the worst contaminants and treat them separately and then just treat residential and commercial for drinking water. Is that something that's on the table? I don't think we've talked about that in any of the advisory groups.
I would be curious to know what municipalities may be doing that so I can look at it a little more just to compare them. So maybe you can give me that later. But we do have a pretreatment program. So we have a division called IWMD, Industrial Waste Management Division within LA San. And they do work with the industries here in Los Angeles to make sure that those most difficult to treat chemicals and elements are taken out before they make it into the sewer system. So I hope that addresses it, but I would think it'd be helpful to have the list so I could maybe more accurately answer.
Yeah, I'll get some information on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kelly, you've got a question.
Just kind of piggybacking off Shelley's, even if you aren't separating it out, would there be a possibility that you increase the stringency of the pretreatment program in terms of as another way to put the onus on the industrial facilities essentially to remove more and make it easier on the plant?
Yeah, so the program that IWMD implements is always changing, and it does grow to meet new regulations. So I think as we do further evaluation of, you know, what plant's going to be changed into and what kind of water we can take in from all these industries, that program will also have to evolve and change. So that is inherent in our programs that we do offer for the industrial users in our city. So I guess, yes, it's a simple answer.
Ray, you've got a question?
Yes, I do. In terms of the plan to actually ship the treated water up to the San Fernando Valley and other points, are those through existing pipelines or will new construction be needed? And then what kind of, it seems to me it'd be a huge power implication because they'd have to have lift stations to move the water essentially uphill.
In short, I think the answer is yes to all your questions. That is on the LADWP side of the house. I believe that they're going to be doing a lot of new construction. They would be the best suited to answer that question in most detail. So I'm sorry, I don't have as much details might be needed for that. But that will be part of what's evaluated in the programmatic EIR is how what's the impact of all these different elements of these programs? How are they cumulatively going to impact our city and our environmental resources here in LA? And there will be also project EIRs that tier off from the programmatic EIR to evaluate some of the construction that you're asking about. So hopefully that's helpful.
Thank you.
Yes, John, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I think it's a really exciting project. I've always promoted, you know, hit that low-hanging fruit of taking sewage effluents and turning it into recyclable products. One thing I wanted to point out, this is more of a comment, is that I'm happy to see that we're going to have a lot less, when this project's really in place, a lot less nutrient flow going into Santa Monica Bay. And that is going to be very important counterbalancing increased nutrient flow when we get heavier predicted storms as we get deeper into climate change. And so I think it's just really helping us achieve, you know, a cleaner bay in doing so. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Are there other questions for Christina on the Hyperion plan? I would be interested, Christina, at some point to hear about the reduction in nutrients in the actual concentrate from the RO process due to ozone and other advanced treatment processes. That, as you know, our Las Virgenes Municipal Water District has built a pilot plant and is preparing to build an advanced water treatment plant. We're in the CEQA process now, but the handling of the concentrate is a very expensive proposition, and I just wonder. I wish you all the luck in the world on getting that done, because sewage outfalls have been problematic for the health of the bay for as long as they've existed, and the concentrate is still going to finish that stuff. Excuse me. The concentrate is still going to transport a lot of that material to the same area. And so it's, I'd love to hear how that's going to be improved. Any other questions?
I do not see any hands raised at this time, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Christina, thank you again for a great presentation. I want to thank all the members of the governing board and members of the public for attending today's meeting. We are going to finish with about 3 minutes to spare from our published agenda. I would remind everyone of the stakeholders meeting that will take place next Thursday on the draft of our 2023 fiscal year work plan. Remind everyone of the executive committee meeting that will take place next month. I had the dates written down, but I buried them somewhere. And our next meeting of the governing board will take place April 21st. And again, watch for watch announcements of our meeting. It may be virtual, it may be in person. So I want to thank everyone for participating, and especially the commission staff. And the meeting is adjourned.